Okay, today we go through Jeremiah 17, verses 5 to 8. And this is the reading for the sixth Sunday after the Epiphany. And this Jeremiah 17 passage is paired with Luke 6, 17 to 26. And I think, as I recall, what are those Luke 6 texts? Are those blessings and curses? The Beatitudes of Luke? Yeah. So they usually try to pair the Old Testament lesson with the gospel. And I take it that the comparison is because Luke has blessings and curses, therefore let's find an Old Testament text with blessings and curses. And Jeremiah 17. Jeremiah 17 is very similar to Psalm 1. So it's a good case of what people call intertextuality, which means you're working with one part of the Old Testament, and chances are it's going to allude to or evoke or recall another part of the Old Testament. A lot of times they'll use the same imagery. They'll even use the same wording and the same expressions. And how to explain these similarities between two different texts. And I think, you know, there are a variety of ways to explain it, but the easiest is that the biblical writers shared in common a sea of common expressions and conventions, images, ideas, and so on, that you don't necessarily have to imagine that, now Jeremiah is reading Psalm 1. It could just be that they share the same set of images. At any rate, it's very similar to Psalm 1. So Jeremiah 17, verse 5, Ko Amar Yahweh, that's known as the messenger formula. The following is what Yahweh has said. Ko means the following. We usually translate it, thus saith the Lord. But I take Amar as referring to a past utterance, so thus spoke Yahweh. And the prophet's job is to repeat what the sender said. So the sender has a message, the prophet tells the recipient of the message, here's what my sender has, here's his message. So it's often called the messenger formula, and it gets at the heart of what a prophet is. A prophet is the messenger of Yahweh, the mouthpiece of Yahweh. Arur ha-gever, cursed is the man. Gever doesn't occur quite as often as ish, but I don't know if there's any semantic difference. I think it just means man. Cursed is the man, asher, who, yivtak ba'adam. Ba'tak is one of your normal faith words in the Old Testament. You know, the hifil of aman means to believe, and ba'tak means to believe, to trust in. Occurs in the Psalms a lot. I ba'tak in Yahweh. So, cursed is the man who trusts in man, in Adam, in mortals, descendants of Adam, as opposed to trusting in Elohim. So that's your basic contrast. Either you trust in God or in man. Vasam, and who places, you got the asher clause goes with the second half too. Sam is the participle of seem, and who places or puts or makes basar, flesh, zero, his arm. Who makes flesh his arm. Zeroa is your arm. It's the arm from the shoulder to your fingertips. Your kaf is your palm. Your yad is your forearm. So to have an outstretched yad is really the forearm. And the zeroa then is the whole arm. To make flesh your arm. Arm apparently is being used metaphorically as metonymically as strength, right? That's the strong part. And so if you make flesh your strength. Arur, you are cursed. And it's a statement of fact. Cursed is. Umin Yahweh, and cursed is the man who, and from Yahweh, Yasur Libo, his heart turns away. So cursed is the man whose heart turns away from Yahweh. Heart in the Old Testament is your mind, your will. It's where you make your decisions. It's not so much the seat of emotions. It's more the seat of thinking and deciding. Different cultures connect different parts of the body with different things. And in our culture, we connect heart more with emotions. But in their culture, they connected it more with what you're planning to do and what you're thinking. So his heart, his mind, turns away from Yahweh. What will happen to him? V'haya. He will be ka'ar'ah. Ar'ar. Ka'ar'ar. He will be like a barren place, a barren, a dried up place, ba'arava, in the desert, velo yireh, and he will not see, ki yavo tov, when good comes. Ki here I think means when. The idea is he won't notice when good comes. He'll be so, such a wasteland that, you know, he won't even notice when good comes along. Vashakan, and he will lie down or he will dwell in Karerim, in parched places, Bamidbar, in the desert. And you got to take Eretz Maleka with the same thing. He will lie down in a land of saltiness, a salt land. It's a lot like the Dead Sea area, completely dead. Velo Teshev, and which does not dwell, which does not inhabit. I think Eretz here is the subject of Teshev. The land does not inhabit. It must mean something like the land is not inhabited. Tim, what do you think?
You could almost translate it as Teshev, you too, kind of impersonal, and you will not live in it.
Oh, you will not.
Meaning,
okay.
But there is a switch then in persons.
Right, switch in persons. I was thinking that maybe Eretz could be the subject, but I don't know what it would mean then. An uninhabited land. Okay, so that's what's going to happen. He's going to wither, be like a desert. Verse 7 is the contrast. Baruch HaGever. Notice we have the same construction as up in verse 5. Blessed is the man, Asher Yivtak BaYahweh, who trusts in Yahweh. So compare that with up verse 5. Cursed is the man who trusts in man. Blessed is the man who trusts in Yahweh. V'haya Yahweh Mivtako. And Yahweh is his confidence, is his trust, is his and Yahweh will be his object of trust. Mivtak is obviously from the same root as Batak. And apparently it means the object of your trust. And so you take that as a resumptive pronoun, and so it would be, blessed is the man who trusts in Yahweh, and then take it over with the next line. Blessed is the man whose trust will be Yahweh. Whose source of trust or object of trust will be Yahweh. And now we have the V'haya clause. It's a simile. He will be ka'etz, like a tree. Shathul, planted, that's a call passive. It has been planted. Al mayim, on the waters. You could take all as beside waters. Unless you want to picture the trees actually, in the middle of the river. I suppose you could picture it that way. Va'al yuval, and on a stream, or by a stream, yushalak, he sends out shoroshau, his roots. And the verb here to send out is a pi'el of shalak, so that it's actually a stronger form of shalak, not just to send out, but to send out frequently. That's the idea. He sends his roots out frequently by a stream. In other words, this tree is constantly going to be nourished. Velo yir'eh, and the k-ray wants you to read this as yir'eh, so pretend there's a hey on the end, even though the consonants don't have a hey. The consonants apparently want you to take it as a jussive. Let him see, let him not see. The k-ray wants you to take it as an imperfect. He will not see. He will not see ki yavo kom, when heat comes. So he won't notice when the heat comes because he's by this water source. It won't bother him. Vahaya alehu, and his leaf will be rahnan, fresh, green, evergreen. So he won't notice when the heat comes. His leaves are always green. Uvishnath batsoreth, and in the year of dearth, lo yidag, he will not become anxious. Da'ag means to be anxious, to be worried, to be nervous. Is the tree the subject of this? The tree won't be nervous? Or is the man the subject of it? The man won't be nervous. And the man is the tree, so it could go either way. But this verb, I think, is more appropriate to human beings than to trees. I don't know if trees become nervous in the summer. I think they do, because my tree certainly, goes berserk in the summer. Anyway, he won't be anxious in the year of dearth. Why? Because he's by this water source. No worries, mate. Velo yamish, and he will not cease me'asoth from doing, from yielding peri fruit. So his tree will give its fruit every season at its time. Okay, so notice the nice parallelism in this pericope. In 5, the Aruch HaGever is parallel to verse 7, the Baruch HaGever. So to be cursed is the antonym of to be blessed. Baruch usually means that Yahweh's favor is upon you, and it usually manifests itself in the crop, in the three K's, crops, kids, and cattle. But it's an is statement. The person is blessed who trusts in Yahweh. And then you go to the future tense, he will be like a tree. And then the cursed statement then is just the obverse. He's under the wrath of God. He is cursed, and he will be like this wasteland. Now notice the how the there's another clause that repeats itself in verse 6. He will be like the RR. In verse 8, he will be like the eights. So they both begin with a ayin. And then in 6b, he will not notice when good comes. In 8b, or 8 in the line below, he will not notice when heat comes. So notice how it's really set up as contrasts. The cursed man, the blessed man, like a wasteland, like a tree that prospers. I think means a bush, a dried up bush. I forgot. Does anybody? I forget what that word means. RR. I think it's close to that. I think it's a dried up bush. I'm sorry. I forgot what RR meant. It only occurs once in the Hebrew Bible. Yeah, I think it's a dried up bush in the desert. So it's so thirsty that it doesn't even notice when the good comes along, when the good weather comes along. And then this man or this bush dwells, verse 6, in parched places in the desert. So there's no water around. And in contrast, this good tree is nourished by the good water. So, the moral of the story, don't be like a tumbleweed, be like a tree. And how do you become like a tree? Well, you got to be planted near the source of water. And it's the water that makes the tree. It's not the tree that's so great. It's the water that makes the tree prosper. So what would be the water here, if we could make a connection? Okay, but in this text, what would he say specifically? Yahweh. So blessed is the man who trusts in Yahweh. Yahweh is like this water, and he keeps you an evergreen, causes your fruit to come out in its season. You can withstand when the heat comes. You don't even notice it because Yahweh is your trust. So when the bad times come, you don't even notice it. Doesn't even affect you. So this idea that when you're with Yahweh, you're in the Garden of Eden, even though it looks like everyone else is in the desert, see? It's always a Garden of Eden with Yahweh. And the opposite of that is to trust in man. Trusting in man is like being a dried up bush in a parched land, in a desert, in an area of salt. Why is that? Why is that? What's so bad about trusting in man? He's flesh. Man decays. Man dies. He can't help you. He's not going to be around. He's like a desert. And if you trust in man, you're going to die like man. Your God is no better than you are. That's the idea. So the text is really kind of like Luther's first commandment. Your God is whatever you trust in. Fear, love, and trust in above all things. Everybody has a God. It's just a question of identifying who your God is. And the contrast here is basically the only two alternatives are either it's man or it's Yahweh, the God of Israel. Those are the only two alternatives. They might name their God Marduk or Baal or something, but really they're just trusting in man because man invented these gods. So it's really kind of that contrast, trusting in man versus God. And it's really a discussion of the first commandment. And it's a threat. If you trust in man, you're going to dry up and wither. But it's also a promise, a glorious promise. The gospel is you trust in Yahweh. You're like this fruitful tree. So you can withstand the hard times. I often think of tumbleweed and how they're, you know, rootless and they're just bouncing around in the wind. And how many people are like that, you know, rootless, not solid, kind of flighty people. You know, what's your religion this week? And next week I'll change it. And they're kind of all over the map, always looking for the latest fad. And this text is saying, be that solid oak, see, that you can withstand the tough times. So be a tree, not a tumbleweed. Amen.